Each time that I think you go, I turn around and you're creeping in. And I can't understand it. I just can't understand it. I just don't understand it. And I must have got lost. I must have got lost. I must have got lost somewhere down the line. I must have got lost. I must have got lost. Give away them days you were mine. I must have got lost. I must have got lost. I must have got lost somewhere down the line. I must have got lost. I must have got lost. Give away the days you were mine. Oh, yeah. Well, I must have
This is Brian Kernahan, and you are listening to WMFO in Medford 91.5 FM, Tufts Educational Radio.
Like that. gotta find just the kind where I'm losing my mind. Out of sight in the night, out of sight in the day. Looking back on the track, gonna do it my way.
When I'm thinking about writing a film, when I have like an idea for a film, is what I'll do is I'll go through my record collection and just start playing songs, trying to like basically, I guess in some ways, find the personality of the movie, find the spirit of the movie, and then boom, eventually like I'll hit like 1, 2, 3 songs that like you know one song in particular, oh, this would be a great opening credit song, you know, because to me the opening credits are very, very important. Because that's sort of like that's like the only like mood time that most movies give themselves, you know, and like, you know, a cool credit sequence and the like with that and the music that plays in front of it, you know, or no play any music in front of it, you know, whatever you decide to do, that sets up like a tone for the movie that is important for you, and so that's, you know, so I'm always trying to find like what the right opening credit or closing credit sequence should be, you know, early on when I'm just even thinking about the story, because once I find it, that really kind of triggers me in to what the personality of this piece should be, what the rhythm of this piece should be. Like I'm saying, you don't have to use music, it could just be silence, all right, but then that's important, that is like kind of in some ways like the rhythm and more or less the personality you're trying to project in this film. Having Mr. Lou as your opening credits it's just so intense, you know. It just says, you're watching an epic, you're watching this big old movie, just sit back, because, you know, I mean, because it's so loud and blaring at you, you know. It's just like, actually, it throws down a gauntlet that the movie now has to live up to, because it's just like, we're big.
You're my love. And good evening, listeners.
Hi there.
We're sitting here in Mark Boland's spacious and really wonderful home in West London. And we were going to...
Luxury penthouse basement.
That's right, luxury penthouse basement. And in fact, we were going to attempt to do a funny tape for you, so, you know, a mock interview thing. But we decided against that because people might take it the wrong way. And can you tell them why, Mark?
Well, it's just... it's very strange with humorous things because people, especially in the pop thing, get very tense about when you do things. And I once said, very jokingly, T-Rex went from a folk duo to the new Led Zeppelin. And that was quoted on about four papers, really big, you know. It's like people thought, that Boland, what a drag, you know, what a number to land.
Something that occurs to me is that I think people have missed some of the humour in what you are doing. I mean, one of the things I've seen often quoted is like when you did Top of the Pops, you know, kind of... the posing, like the Guitar Hero. Right. Can you sort of tell us about that? Because I know you did that kind of as a laugh, didn't you? You saw great humour in going on there.
Well, I mean, I think if you're going to do something, you've got to do it. I mean, it's no good going, especially on something like that, which is a very strange environment. And then suddenly it's, you know, you've got your record and all the people have bought it, which is nice and that, and you go there. And I can't see, there's no way that one can do it, seriously. One can do it lovingly. I mean, I appreciate being there and I think it's important. And on a serious note, I think it's important that people like myself and The Who still do those shows. Mm-hmm. The amazing thing when Hendrix always used to do it and The Cream, I used to get so excited, you know. Even now I still watch all those shows, mm-hmm. hoping to see someone nice on, you know. But sure, I mean, I just do it as jive. I mean, it's jive. I mean, the music's serious and I'm into that, but I can't take that seriously. I mean, it really is an abstract art form. Again, see, a lot of people picked up on the fact I did it for Get It On, I did it and stuck the lead down my bum, you know. And I said, you know, if you're not going to have an amp anyway, I mean, you might as well stick the lead up your bum. I mean, it's, you know what I mean? It's like, it's irrelevant where you put it. And people say, oh, you know, really sort of got into it and had a go, and that's sad. But cool, I mean, that's what they want to find. But I mean, it's, sure. You have to be loose in situations. Mm. Loosed and juiced.
Loose and juiced, man.
And you're cool.
With you all away. Right. But do you find it somewhat distressing in some ways that people can't, you know, see the humour in that the position of pop today is such that everything has got to be so straight on the level, very cool. And like what you're doing, in fact, is in the stage performance and in the way you put it over, at least, is clowning around.
Well, I wouldn't say clowning around. I think all I do now is I hang much looser than I did.
Yeah.
But that's a thing that as a human being, I'm much looser than 3 years. One feels a bit restricted sitting cross-legged on a stage for 3 years. I've just speeded up my whole lifestyle and my head is faster and looser and I just really want to communicate with people in the little time that I have, you know, because I might disappear tomorrow. I don't particularly know, you know, I'm not... But I got very aware of the lack of security in anything and the inevitability of the whole thing disappearing anyway, be it the planet, rock and roll, Mark Boland or Tony Norman or the BBC, for that matter.
Good Lord.
Falling down a hole in the ground, you know.
Watch what you're saying. Going back some time, I suppose about a year now, I remember we were talking, and at this time, T-Rex was not a very successful band, as it is now. You just finished recording a record called White Swan, which was about to be released. Do you remember this interview?
No.
And at the time, you were telling me, if this one doesn't... Yeah, you were very depressed. And if this one doesn't make it, you were really going to phase out the music side and concentrate on writing, making maybe one or two albums a year and getting a place in the country as such.
Sure.
Moving out of London, moving out of music and writing. I don't really think too many people realise that, do you?
Well, no. That's one point we made clear. Because, you know, we always sold albums, and we started out initially as an album band. And it's after a while, I began to not get bored with what was happening, because the kids that listened to the music were very nice, and we, you know, were good people. And they were the people that saved me from freaking out many times, because I had a reason, you know, someone to do it for. But I just wanted to speed up the whole communication system and either write very seriously or reach more people much quicker, get more sort of artistic satisfaction is what it's about. And I've always been intrigued by the media, and it was I just slowly veered away from the rock and roll situation, the pop industry, and became sort of locked in my own prison of living in Portobello Road and sitting in my room, writing my little songs, recording them, putting the album out, having it chart for a couple of weeks and then move away, and then doing the occasional concert tour. And I was really stagnating, but not in my head, just in the situation that I was working in. And when you came that time, I wanted to boogie. I really wanted to speed the whole thing up. And reach people quicker, do more things for the kids. I wanted to keep the prices down on concerts. But one, to do that, one had to be able to fill the hall completely. So if one was going to do the Albert Hall, I had to be sure that we could draw 6,000 people, you know. And I just, it's strange. It was a strange time. Because I really had no intention of continuing at all, you know. And it was weird for me to say, well, I will put White Swan out and we'll see what happens. And if, you know, it was a question of getting it played on the radio. You know, I thought if it gets played, I think it'll do what I wanted. It wasn't a question of even selling records. It was getting what I wanted out of it, you know. And it just sort of happened. As soon as I got into that frame of mind, the whole, a new phase, it's phases, you know.
Mm.
Like, I've ended this year, the phase of what I started is ended. And we've done 5 million records this year.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. You know, 5 million records from 30,000, which was the year before.
Yeah.
And it hasn't changed me at all. The only thing that's changed is my attitude to working.
So right now, you're quite satisfied. And obviously, you say you've come to virtually the end of a one-year cycle.
The end of
cycle.
This year, yeah. 72 is going to be a heavy boogie. I haven't started yet, and I haven't even got into it, you know. There's movies, and there's so much to do, you know, which I wouldn't have been able to do without the aid of those singles, you know.
Yeah.
I'll still continue to make singles while I have songs that I think are important. You know, I believe every single that we've done in its own way has been important. Fortunately, the sounds have mirrored that, you know, I'm very, very grateful for that. But it's the importance of the records. That's, you know, like with the Electric Warrior, I do believe it's an important album. I've read a couple of things that someone said that it's really a good album, it would be on the charts for 6 months, but the words are nonsense. And that really shook me because it's the most truthful thing I've ever written. And there's a lot of some rip-off in particular, which I wrote in America. There's a lot of relevant statements. For the first time, I've actually made statements. I've not guised them in a sort of fantasy background. And people immediately assume that I'm writing about fantasies. It's very strange, you know?
Mm.
There's just one line in a song called Girl, which is, God, high in your fields above earth, come and be real for us. You with your mind, you're beautifully fine. For me, I felt very strongly about that as a statement. And that's my religious feelings are slightly on that. And for someone to say it's nonsense, that disappoints me.
Yeah.
Because it means they didn't even read. They automatically put me in that, I'm no longer a bopping elf, right? I'm now your teenage rock star.
Can I come in? Do you find it difficult, in fact, to retain your own identity?
Not at all, no. Because, you know, if I have an image at all, it's based on the fact that whatever I do is truthful. You know, to live a lie is much more painful than telling the truth, you know.
Mm.
I don't mind being knocked by people, as long as I know the four strengths of the situation, because I can jive back with them, you know. It's like if people seriously believe that I do 3 years of albums that I really believed in, and then for the sake of being on Top of the Pops, completely get to a whole new environment that I didn't believe in, then they underestimate me incredibly. You know, so if they've bought my albums for 3 years, I'm very disappointed, but they should assume that I'd succumb to such an empty situation, you know. But there's very few people, you know, most of the kids that have stayed with us still appreciate it, you know. When I started out with an electric band, it's not like, they have this illusion about where you come from.
That's right.
They really think that I fell out of the sky and just happened to be with my acoustic guitar in the forest.
A bopping elf.
Right, you know.
They thought you lived on a mushroom.
Right, or whatever.
But in fact, I mean, you weren't living on a mushroom. As you say, you started out with a pop band. You went to Germany with a pop band.
Hard rock band, rock. 400 watts I was playing with, you know, as a heavy guitar player. That's why it's so, you know, I drive about with, like, playing. I mean, I do consider myself a musician now, which I never did before. I'm a compatible guitar player. I mean, depending on how one feels about, you know, a lot of people have told me recently, they think I'm very good. A lot of people think I'm terrible. I've heard the same said about Hendrix, and I've defended him when I've heard people, you know, like Band of Gypsies, a lot of people ripped off. And to me, that's such an amazing technical feat, you know. And I don't really have technical feet, right? Automatic shoe.
Yes.
So I mean, it's music, such a strange thing. People should always think twice. Never underestimate your superstars.
He's gonna be glad when you take the hand of the dickweed guy. Oh yeah. Weeder, he's such a messy eater. He got frogs in his eyes from telling those lies. Saturday's almost Monday and you got a heart last night. And he's gonna be glad when you take the hand of the dickweed guy. She's got me on the telly. Damn, me the dog. He's a rock up in the yard. The kids are young, but that's how they get down. You gotta understand when you take the hand of the dickweed guy. Oh yeah. You're gonna be grand. Gonna be grand. Gonna be grand. Gonna be grand. In heat with a dancing feet, rides a toto bike. He does what he likes. My hair's a light, but you are out of sight. And you gotta understand when you take the hand of the dickweed guy. Oh yeah. You gotta understand when you take the hand of the dickweed guy. Oh yeah. You're gonna be grand.
One of the things about using music in movies that's like so cool is the fact that if you do it right, if you use the right song in the right scene, and it just, I mean, because I mean, really, when you take songs and put them in a sequence in a movie right, it's about as cinematic a thing as you can do. I mean, it really, you're really doing what movies do better than any other art form, you know? I mean, it really works in this visceral, emotional, cinematic, you know, way that's just like special. I mean, it's just really, really special. And when you do it right and you hit it right, then the effect is you can never really hear that song again without kind of thinking about that image from the movie. I personally don't know if Jerry Rafferty necessarily appreciated the connotations that I brought to Stuck in the Middle with You. There's a good chance he didn't.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you. And I'm wondering what it is I should do. It's so hard to keep the smile from my face. Losing control, yeah, I'm all over the place. Clowns to the left of me,
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds, because you're mine. I walk the line. I find it very, very easy to be true. I find myself alone when each day's through. Yes, I'll admit that I'm a fool for you, because you're mine. I walk the line. As sure as night is dark and day is light, I keep you on my mind both day and night. And happiness I've known proves that it's right, because you're mine. I walk the line. You've got a way to keep me on your side. You give me cause for love that I can't hide. For you I know I'd even try to turn the tide, because you're mine. I walk the line. I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds, because you're mine. I walk the line.
You loved me and that you always would. Then I said I another tank of gas, back on the road again. Me and you and a dog named Boo, traveling and living off the land. Me and you and a dog named Boo, how I love being a free man. Now I'll never forget the day we motored stately into Big L.A. The lights of the city put settling down my brain.